Watchable episode 66, our first recap episode for Avatar The Last Airbender. I'm your host this week, Natalie, and this week we have Caitlin, Michal, and Brittany with us to discuss the first two episodes of Avatar, The Boy in the Iceberg and The Avatar Returns. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Who's excited to start watching the show?
Woo! Yay!
I've never been on Rewatchable before, let alone hosted an episode, so hopefully this doesn't go too badly. But if you want to reach any of us to talk about the show or any of the past series of Rewatchable that we've done before, you can email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can get any of us on Twitter @re_watchable on Twitter, or you can comment on the post on Hyperball for this episode if you want to chat about this specific recap or really anything in general. So getting right into things, episode one, The Boy in the Iceberg, I'll just read the synopsis and then we'll have a chat about it. So this week, just quickly to remind everyone, who's a newbie? It's just Brittany that's a newbie this week, right?
Yep, just me.
Okay, and everyone else is a super fan of some description.
Yep.
Yes. Have gifts, we'll travel.
All right, so this is our recap of Boy in the Iceberg, which was written by Mitch, I believe. Welcome to the world of Avatar, one in which four types of benders exist. Only the Avatar, master of fire, earth, air, and water, can operate more than one element. The world was at peace for a while, up until the Fire Nation was a bully and stomped on everyone's sandcastles. The Avatar was meant to keep peace, but the air nomad in the cycle of Avatars mysteriously vanished, just as the firebenders initiated their war. 100 years pass, and the last waterbender of the South Pole, Katara, and her sassy older brother Sokka happen upon a frozen 10-year-old air nomad named Aang. The last of his kind, he surprises everyone with his fun, floaty, quote-unquote, magic. Ever the one for penguin sledding, Aang has Katara race on the creatures and explore an abandoned booby-trapped Fire Nation ship. A flare is sent out, alerting Zuko, a banished Fire Nation prince, and his uncle Iroh of their presence. Zuko vows to return his honor by capturing the elusive last airbender. So, just before we get into the discussion of the main points of the episode, I wanted to sort of know if anyone had any first impressions, or, well, you know, first rewatchy impressions or first impressions for Brittany of the episode overall as a kind of pilot of a show, and what it made you feel watching it this time. So does anyone want to go first with that?
Well, I can go first since it's my first time watching it.
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, this episode really set up everything, I'm assuming, and especially with the second episode. So I sort of was a little lost in the beginning because you have that intro to the show, which I thought was just like the opening credits, but it really gave a lot of background. So I actually watched it a couple of times just to like listen to it, so I know kind of what I'm getting into. And so I felt like very active watching this as opposed to just like sitting back and enjoying it. I felt like I had to almost like immerse myself as like a class sort of to get ready to watch it. But then I just enjoyed learning, meeting all the characters, and I've never watched anything that's, I guess drawn in like an anime style. 'Cause this is like a cartoon. It's not anime, but it's drawn in anime style. So I enjoyed that. The only like stuff that I've watched that is actually anime, like it's weird to see their mouths actually line up with the dialogue, which is something I focused on a lot more than I probably should have. I was watching like the way that they were drawn, syncing up to what they were saying a lot. But I thought the whole concept was really interesting. I'm excited to see and learn more about like earthbenders, or is it earth?
Yeah.
Okay, it is okay. This is going to be a learning curve.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny that you should say that about the mouths, because it's the most anime, like, based thing that I've ever watched. And so for me, the dialogue, like, the mouths are really off in terms of the dialogue. Like, they are the other end of the spectrum for what I'm used to in terms of animation or anything like that. For me, they are very like, that was something I had to get used to in the opposite way to what you're describing, I think. So that's fun. Caitlin, you've done a lot of anime, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. How's that for you? How does this sort of compare to the Japanese style? Because a big thing about this is it is a combination of Japanese and American styles. It's very Asian based in terms of, I mean, the cultures in the show, and it's got Asian influence in some of the creative team, but how does it, where does it fit in that spectrum?
I mean, it's not something I actually noticed just because I'm used to watching anime, which is, it's different in that the anime is done clearly in Japan and then they animate it and have to base that on the Japanese dialogue. And then when they bring it over, like, they have to write the dub scripts to get as close to the mouth flaps as possible while retaining the meaning, which clearly is difficult. And then when American animation can be animated based on the English script, which is easier. But I've just watched so much animation that I don't really even pay attention to the mouth flaps much at all anymore.
Okay. I mean, what about, like, the style and the concept in general of, you know, Avatar The Last Airbender in terms of, you know, Western versus Asian animation, or, like, the kind of themes or plot of a show? Is it very American, or is it sort of somewhere in the middle?
I mean, it's clearly very influenced, and they bring in a lot of, it's influenced by a lot of different cultures, as we'll see as it goes on. But just kind of the style is clearly very anime influenced, with just kind of the drawing style. And but I mean, I think if I hadn't known, I might have assumed that it was more on the anime spectrum, just because it's not really what you expect from an American cartoon.
Yeah. It's very like a kind of, it's the Western, you know, it's the most anime that a Western show would get, if that's what you mean.
I've heard pretty it much, referred to as, like, basically an American anime. So
yeah.
If it were, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it's definitely, I've never known much about anime, you know, unless you count childhood going to see the Pokemon movie, which I don't. So yeah, it's definitely the most influenced, you know, the most Japanese or anime influenced thing I've ever seen. So yeah, I don't have much of that perspective, but moving on to sort of one of the main discussion points, in terms of the Brittany, you sort of seem to enjoy the premiere for all of the information. But one of the things that was brought up is, you know, this is part one of the, you know, series premiere. It's basically a pilot, you know, and a lot of setup was needed. Like, do you guys who have seen it before, like watching it like this, did you feel like it was, like, too much set up to enjoy the episode for what it was? Or did you sort of enjoy it and get immersed in it again, or even your first time watching it? Do you remember sort of enjoying it, or was it too much of a sort of exposition situation?
So is that for me? Super fans?
So, I don't... Yeah, sorry. To the you guys that have watched it before. Caitlin, do you want to go first? Or?
Sure. Something that struck me when I was rewatching was just how fast it moved.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I've watched the entire series multiple times, and I've been watching Korra, so, you know, it's not, I wasn't overwhelmed by it because I know what's going on, but I was surprised at how quickly it was moving. I had forgotten how much information you get, really, but you have to have that information to start with, or what's going on doesn't make a lot of sense if you don't have that kind of info dump at the beginning, because you have to set up this world. Otherwise, you really have no idea who these people are and what the context of their issue with Aang and everything is.
And they kind of move it along so fastly, you know, so quickly, that you don't end up sort of sitting there. I mean, maybe you did, Brittany. I'm actually curious to see what you thought about this. But you don't start asking the question of why Aang was in the iceberg, if you know what I mean. Like, it sort of doesn't even give you time to think about that. And that obviously comes up later, and it's, you know, not really for reasons you might have initially assumed. But I can't sort of remember at all wondering the why of that situation, because everything was just going and going and going. Michael, do you like, what were your sort of impressions watching it again for the first time? Well, again for the first time, you know what I mean?
I think it works really well as a, you know, obviously it's a lot easier to appreciate what they do with this when you have the entire series behind you. Mm. But I still think, I mean, I just appreciate the elements that make it kind of unique as a pilot. Like, after the, you know, the big introduction scene, which does touch on some pretty, like, heavy topics, right? Mm. But after that, like, you have, I don't know, at least, like, a couple of seconds of, like, silence, you know, and just, like, these two kids, like, going on a boat, and, like, it's not, you know, it doesn't open with, like, action, blah, 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 which is really interesting to me for a Nickelodeon pilot, you know, from basically first-time showrunners, mm. You know, and then I really like it, and I think that, like, introducing us to the world in that, like, really kind of quiet way, you know, with Sokka and Katara's conversation, and, like, you understand the entirety of their relationship within, like, 5 seconds, and that's, I think, really interesting. And, you know, like, the main character doesn't come in until, I don't know, 5 minutes in?
Yeah,
So that's really interesting, too. Yeah, so, I mean, I liked it. I, you know, and moving on, I think it's always hard for me to remember that they don't know that Aang is the Avatar.
Yeah, because, like, I forgot that they don't find that out in the first episode. Like, I kind of forgot that he sort of hid that, and it, that sort of re-surprised me.
Yeah, because I keep thinking, like, well, he's an airbender, guys. Like, obviously, he's the Avatar.
Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't, you know, that isn't the logic that they're working on.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing is really, is really interesting.
Yeah. What I found sort of the most jarring, like, not necessarily in a negative way, but the most, like, oh yeah, that's kind of how that was, is obviously, you know, where I was sort of leaving the characters was at the end of their journey in Avatar The Last Airbender from the last time I rewatched it. And I sort of forgotten just, like, the difference in how, you know, kind of how naive a lot of them are, and how obviously there's, you know, any show has massive change, and that's the entire point of watching it, you know, to see that growth and all that kind of thing. But just how different and naive they were, like, the circumstances they were in, they were really insular, and just, it is a fantastic show in terms of character growth, so that's going to be fun. But, I mean, both Sokka and Katara, just their current position when you meet them is just miles and miles away from what they sort of are and know at the end. But if we want to talk about the characters specifically a little bit, you know, you sort of meet Katara and Sokka first, and Katara is the catalyst of the whole show because her waterbending, her sort of vaguely inept waterbending, is the thing that breaks open Aang's iceberg. And sort of Katara immediately, you see, is, you know, a teenager who doesn't really think of herself as a kid anymore. Sokka and Katara seem to be the only two young people in their town, so they're kind of stuck, you know, in between childhood and adulthood. They don't really have a childhood because they were kind of the only older kids involved in this, you know, when all the families went away to war. And so it's sort of them, a bunch of old people and a bunch of little kids, which, you know, is a circumstance where when you're a teenager, you especially in a civilization that is, you know, not necessarily as embracing of, like, the child thing, like, you know, people getting responsibilities a lot younger in any kind of, you know, this is obviously an alternate universe, but it's also kind of set back in time a bit in what if it was in our universe. It's not the current amount of technology and culture. So they've, you know, obviously switched over to being the adults of the tribe. You know, Sokka is pretty much the only man there because he's not quite army aged, you know, but he's also not a child. he takes that very, very seriously, like, however, you know, however hilarious it might be. And then Katara is also in that position as far as women go, though there are other women there. So, I mean, Katara, as I said, is your catalyst in terms of Aang and in terms of introduction to bending as well. She's, you know, has the gift of bending, which apparently no one else in the tribe still does in the Southern Water Tribe where they're from. And Sokka is sort of the comedic relief, but as I said, is very, very, very intense about, you know, feeling the pressure of being, you know, a man and a warrior and trying to protect the little village as well as they can. So, yeah, I mean, Brittany, I'll go with you first because, again, you haven't seen it. What was your sort of first impressions of those characters and their relationship and basically the introduction to the Water Tribe? And what did it sort of make you think about the world that they're in?
Well, I thought everyone had bending powers until I watched it. So okay. That was news. I, like, assumed that, you know, every single person had it and that the air, like, this is my initial impression before watching it, is that every single person had bending powers and that the air tribe was just completely wiped out. So okay. There was only one airbender. So I was like, oh, well, how come, like, all these grannies can't just be like, here's how you bend water? So, but now I get it, mm-hmm. that she's the only one in the South Pole, I think they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, and then there's Northern Water Tribes in the West Pole.
The map that they show in the credits is a pretty good indication of, like, where the various tribes are. So there's, like, a North and South Pole, like, you know, Water Tribe, and then there's a big Earth area and a big Fire area. And I mean, anyone else, like, as I said, like, I kind of, the way I remember Sokka and Katara is very different to the way they are in this episode. Did this sort of bring anything back for anyone, Mikhail or Caitlin?
Well, I remember, like, the first time I watched it, like, fully through, I was in the position of, like, I'd suggested the show to my sister, mm-hmm. and, we were both in college at the time, and so I kept kind of like anything that suggested to me that this was more than a kid's show, I was like harping on, and I was like, look how intense it is that they're the only, like, you know, that this is the tribe and that all the men are off at war. And my sister was like, uh-huh. Cause I was kind of trying to, like, justify us watching this show. But I still think that it's like they don't really dwell on it, but it's still really, like, there's a lot of implications there, you know, that, like, all the men are off at war and, you know, their Katara and Sokka's mother is dead, so you know, she has this, like, you know, difficult responsibility, and he has this difficult responsibility, and they aren't really communicating about their issues because they're kind of just, like, surviving. And yeah, I mean, I really like that setup, and I like that Aang just kind of comes in knowing nothing and, like, you know, kind of helps but also messes things up with his, like, ignorance that obviously he has no way of knowing literally anything because he's 100 years old and has no idea. But, yeah, I like the way they start, and that I think it gives you a really interesting perspective, especially as the series goes on, like, where the kind of insular world that they start from.
Yeah. One thing that's not ever made particularly clear, and you can tell I'm a Teen Wolf fan by harping on about this, because anyone will know that one of the biggest things to harp on about in the Teen Wolf fandom is they're not specifying characters' ages. They're not made particularly clear how old everyone is, but it is actually known. Like, Brittany, did you get an impression about ages at all in this with the main characters that you met?
Well, besides Aang, mm-hmm. What is the guy's name? The firebender? I know he's, like, Zuko, right?
Yeah,
he's,
Zuko.
I would assume he's, like, 18-ish. And then everyone else is a little bit younger. I used him as, like, my going off point, so...
They're all a bit younger.
Yeah, I would say, like, 16 and 13.
Yeah, it's close. Yeah, it's Aang is 12, Katara's 14, Sokka is 15, and Zuko is 16. He's not actually that much older than them.
Oh, he did. Maybe just because he's tall.
Yeah. Him and Sokka are very, very similar in age. But yeah, it is, you know, as I said, it's like a funny age for them to be kind of stuck having these kind of weird responsibilities. Caitlin, what is your kind of lingering, well, returning impression of the two main, the brother and sister, you know, as soon as we meet them? Like, do you kind of like that? Are you a fan of either of those characters? Does either one sort of remain your fave throughout the series, or what's your deal with them?
I'm like you. I have the lingering impression from later in the series, so it's, I'm struck by how far they have to go.
Yeah.
I guess. What really struck me was kind of immediately Sokka makes a sexist comment towards Katara and she calls him out on it. Mm. And, you know.
To have that scene in a kids' pilot show, like a pilot of a new show for children, in the first 5 minutes, that kind of interaction on the iceberg where she's, you know, calling him out. It's a pretty big deal, and it's one of the reasons why my sister-in-law was like, I want my kids to watch this show, so, like, my little niece and nephew. But yeah, it is, like, I mean, with that comment of Sokka's, did you sort of take him seriously, or did you think he was just trying to goad her, or what were your initial impressions of Sokka?
I mean, he is very, I get the impression of him being, you know, very teenage boy putting up a front, but also kind of the underlying actual sexism, because even if he were just trying to goad her with that, he wouldn't think of making a comment like that unless there was some kernel of him believing that. So they tell you that, I feel like, to tell you that's something that will be addressed down the line. You're supposed to understand that as a part of who he is.
Yeah.
And that they're going to address it and that Katara is not going to take it. So you immediately get the, you know, girl power kind of thing with her, that she is not going to put up with boys thinking they are better than her. And so I like that immediately, the strength of the female character and that she's the one with the power and Sokka's the one who he's the one who gets splashed with water. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a nice little shift in power dynamics than you might expect, which I also appreciate.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few clues in the first episode to where everyone is going to go, and it shows some of their immediate biggest flaws and biggest strengths, if you know what I mean, when it comes to Sokka and his sort of determination and bravery, as well as his, you know, flaws about, you know, the way that he sees Katara and the way that he sees bending as well. And that also sort of goes for Katara with her, you know, with her strength and her, you know, her determination as well. But then her also sort of flaws in terms of tending to see things through rose-colored glasses a bit here with, you know, with the Aang situation and also her ability to get a bit sanctimonious. And I think Aang as well, you know, once we meet Aang, which will be our next introduction, it also tells you quite a lot of him straight away without telling you anything at all, including the fact that he's the Avatar or that he's hiding that. So, that, you know, they bust him out of there, and obviously, you know, everyone, you know, including Brittany, you'd know that Aang was the Avatar, presumably, even just from the DVD cover or whatever, or he's the main character. So yeah, initial introduction to Aang, you know, coming out of that iceberg and going penguin sledding, how was that? Was that kind of what you're expecting from the main character, or what was your initial impression of him?
Well, I thought he was cute.
he is so cute.
He is cute. He was kind of what I was anticipating. I didn't know that he would be in an iceberg. Well, I mean, I guess the title kind of gave that away. But like you were saying, like, I think earlier, where the episodes are so short, you don't really have time to think about, like, oh, how did he get in there? Why is he in there? I just sort of assumed, like, it was one of those things where they wanted to protect him, so they, like, froze him, and there was something going on, and they threw him in there, and they froze him, and now he's here.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have time to think about that too much, but I don't know. I really liked him. I think that he was kind of what I was anticipating because of those few moments of seeing him in the iceberg. You kind of know that he doesn't know as much as he probably should about his own powers and what's going on. So I liked his introduction, not knowing anything, and you're really probably going to see him grow as a character, which I'm looking forward to.
Did you know, out of curiosity, I don't, when you started the show, Brittany, did you know what the avatar was? Did you know what an avatar was? Like, did you know what the title meant whatsoever?
No idea.
Okay. And what's your impression of the avatar so far, of the idea of what it is?
I think it works in the world, obviously. Otherwise, the show would be pretty pointless.
Yeah.
but I guess I just need a little more content, because I've only seen two episodes, so yeah. I think I like where the show is going to go. I think it's an interesting concept, but I had to stop after two episodes, so I think I'm going to need a little bit more.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Zuko.
Yes. I'm like, yeah, like, forget about Aang. Let's talk about Zuko. Okay.
Please.
Oh, God. Okay.
Wait, do we like Zuko? Oh my God, Zuko! And what Brittany knows is that there's this angry guy with a ponytail.
This is going to be a problem. All right, Brittany, when it comes to Zuko, no comment. Basically,
I don't like him. Obviously, I've only seen him, and he's trying to kill everyone.
Yeah. Oh God, this is gonna be hell.
Okay. Well. No. Okay. Oh, right, all right. You may be able to answer this question.
Yeah.
Is he trying to kill Aang, or is he trying to capture Aang?
He doesn't really know what he's doing. I'm going to say that. Okay, I'm going to...
Oh my God, that's like Zuko's caption.
He doesn't really know what he's doing. I want to skip ahead very, very, very quickly to a quote that Caitlin has mentioned as her favorite quote, which she totally stole both of my quotes, by the way, that I also wrote down, so I had to find some other ones. But in the second episode, we'll get to it, Aang says to him, you're just a child, and Aang says, well, you're just a teenager. I'm going to assume Caitlin chose this for the same reason that I did. Zuko, he is the teenager. He is not a teenager. He is the teenager. He is the teenageriest teenager that has ever teenaged in the history of time. And Zuko is a gift. I'm not going to say whether that's like a villain or whatever. All I'm going to say is he's a gift to this show. And yeah, I guarantee that regardless of what his plot is, you will not hate him. But moving on from that, he's just hilarious at the moment. Like, it's just so funny to watch him and his,
So you guys are finding him funny now, but I don't find him funny at all. I just wanted to smack him.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll accept. Yeah, probably. Caitlin, how did you feel about it?
Oh, I was laughing. It's hard. I can't say why I was laughing, but I was.
He's. Oh, this is so. I'm. By the way, I'm totally looking right now above my desk. I have these little strips of long strips of scroll that my friend did for me that are Zuko firebending, like firebending tutorials, like poses. And yeah, I have two strips of that right above my desk. So the fact that I have Zuko fan art on my wall is going to say something about my opinions of this show, I suppose. But yeah, I found him hysterical. I don't need any calming tea, which is just, I just, it's just, Uncle Iroh as well is a beautiful gift of a character, but I understand, obviously, at this point, all we've seen is them driving around on a ship trying to capture the Avatar. I mean, what did you sort of grasp so far in terms of what he's doing and why? You know, he mentions going, you know, bringing the Avatar back to his father, and it's for the sake of his honor. Caitlin, I can't say the word without laughing. Do you want to fill in a little bit here?
I guess I'm just curious, Brittany, what you, yeah, like Natalie said, what you grasp about him right now, because we have a very kind of limited understanding about what he's about.
Well, I think that right now he just wants to, he just wants to one-up his dad. He's like, oh, my dad went out, he couldn't find the Avatar, but I'm totally going to find it. And he's very, like, cocky and just wants to prove everyone wrong, even if it means sailing in frozen waters for, like, decades, which he's more than willing to do. But I feel like but he's not even completely trained yet. He's so stubborn and just, like his uncle said, he doesn't want to take the time. He just wants the power. And he's very antsy. And I feel like with the type of show that we're watching and the creators and whatever, it's more focused on, like, you have to, like, really hone this art of bending. It's not just something that you can, like, one of those with great power comes great responsibility type of moments. But he doesn't care. He just wants to, like, watch the world burn.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. Oh, Michal, what are your Zuko feelings at the moment? Or, I mean, we can't say too much in general. If I started talking about my opinions of Zuko in general, we would probably ruin the show for everyone. But how are you at him about him at this point?
Oh, I love that we hate him right now. I just, you're getting, like, literally, like, I won't say he's quite one-dimensional, because one-dimensional villains don't have, like, any, like tangible motivation. He clearly has a tangible motivation. It just seems stupid. I like that. And Iroh, you know, really stands out to me also as just, like, oh, I love Iroh, you know, right from the first. Like, even, it's like we're on this villain ship, right? There's this guy who's like, tea, I'm going to play my game and eat my food.
Come play with, drink tea with me.
Life goals is Iroh. Iroh is like a hero to us all. Like, but, oh, it's just, have they mentioned how long they've been doing this for? Did they mention that in the first two episodes? I can't quite remember.
I feel like Iroh made a comment about it, but I don't remember the exact time.
Is that a big spoiler? Could I say that, and would that be a problem if I said how long they've been doing it?
Yeah, don't mention that.
Okay, because I ask because it is quite significant.
Then don't. If I don't remember, yeah, then it's probably because I didn't say it.
Yeah. Did you notice anything about his scar? Did it make you kind of, like, his face? Like, did it make you wonder?
Well, I thought it was face paint at first. But now I know that it is actually a scar. I thought it was like, you know, he wakes up in the morning and instead of putting on eyeliner, like, puts his rest stuff on his face.
I wish that was true.
He's so angsty. So why wouldn't he just, like, look in the mirror and, like, put this, like, paint on, like, I'm superior to all of you. Yeah. But now I get that it's a scar.
I don't even need this eye.
And, so, yeah, now I'm interested as to why he has that.
Zuko, you will learn a lot about Zuko. I mean, you'll learn a lot about all of the characters, but, Zuko's journey is certainly one that will be explored. I think that at the moment it's best summed up as he really doesn't know what he's doing, because he's an emo teen. He's the emoest teen that's ever teened. And that's about where we're at with him currently. And it is, I understand that he is, you know, right now that you're looking at him very, you know, oh my God, he's trying to kill this cute little boy that you've seen, you know, you've found. And, you know, the Fire Nation seem to have been responsible for a whole lot of really bad stuff, but I can't watch him without laughing at the moment. So yeah, this is gonna be a long 7 months. But I am looking forward to it though.
I'll come back and listen to this episode in 7 months and laugh at myself.
Yeah,
I'm willing to do that.
Yeah, I really can't wait to hear Karen's thoughts on him as well. But he reminds me a lot of so many of the best emo characters of all time, like Derek Hale and various other people. But yeah, I think that even as a villain, he has these fantastic, flouncy, comedic moments, like the, you know, I don't want any calming tea, and it just kind of shows you straight away that he is completely ridiculous. So yeah, I love that. But yeah, it's great. Yeah, so where are we now? We've basically Aang before Zuko ends up sort of spotting them, Aang ends up back at the tribe with Katara and Sokka's grandmother, you know, with the kids, and they meet Gran, and they meet you know, the very small tribe, and you kind of see that circumstance. And Sokka, you know, and Gran is very protective of Katara being the last waterbender, and she's also quite skeptical about Aang. You know, all they know at the moment is that he's an airbender, and, you know, from their perspective, they know that all of the other airbenders are gone. Apparently they're not putting two and two together and saying, okay, well, we know that the last airbender was an Avatar, and we know that Avatar disappeared, and we know all the other airbenders are dead. But anyway, so they know he's an airbender, and this apparently delights Katara because, you know, she's planning to fly away with him and, you know, learn waterbending, and Gran's not too into that and says, don't put all your faith into him. I mean, did you guys sort of think anything about that situation, about why she's so reluctant and jaded potentially? Caitlin or Mikhail, do you sort of think anything about this, like, in either in retrospect or just at this point? Do you think it's a valid concern?
Well, it's interesting, like, when you look at Katara backward, it's interesting what her concerns are and how often she says the word hope. I think they're all so much smaller than they become, and it's very interesting because they don't see themselves that way. Like, they see themselves as having, like, the problems of the world on their shoulders. Like, there's no adults, and, like, helpful adults in their tribe. Like, their mom's dead, their father's at war. Like, they both have just, like, they imagine these huge responsibilities, and, like, to see their lives change in this way that they have really no idea what's going on, like, is really interesting in retrospect.
Yeah, it is. It's like, and with Katara's reaction to Aang, it really seems like that she's looking for any kind of escape and anything that can make her world bigger as well, which may be why she sort of latches on so fast. I mean, having that bending power and not really knowing how to use it, of course, is a massive hindrance. But yeah, she does get a bit starry-eyed at first, and I mean, so does Aang. I think one of the circumstances that you first see with Aang in the tribe is he comes and he's in the tribe. Aang, you may or may not have noticed, Brittany, is a massive show-off, and that's absolutely there from the first episode. In terms of him kind of, you know, he's very earnest, but he does like the attention and showing off, you know, with his glider and everything that he's doing, and he kind of looks, and he wants Katara's approval, and she wants his kind of freedom and what he has to offer, and it is a very instantaneous bond between them. And I suppose that's always something that, when that happens, that's always something that people around you question a little bit. Like, it's like, you've known this person 5 minutes, why are they becoming your number one priority in the whole world? And it is a little bit of that as well, I think. One thing I wanted to just mention before we go on to the next episode, unless anyone has any other thoughts about this particular episode, is the whole bending not being magic circumstance, because this is just something I've been trying to puzzle out for about 5 years. So if anyone has anything to contribute, I would love to know. They make a point, you know, Sokka sort of calls it magic sarcastically, and, you know, she's like, it's not magic, it's waterbending, and you know, and they kind of call, so it seems like in this world isn't really supernatural in the terms of, it's not meant to be a mystical thing, it's meant to be just a sort of a part of nature, which sort of begs the question, if it is that, why is not everyone a bender like Brittany assumed, and what do you think the differences are between like a magic and water bending or air bending or any of the bending qualities?
Well, okay, so...
Oh, sorry.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Maybe this is... Because I think it's along the lines of, like, is it an inherent quality or is it, like, just something learned. That happens yeah. to people, or is it learned? And because obviously the grandmother, like, she's the last waterbender in the tribe. So I didn't really understand why the grandmother didn't want her to, like, you know... find some way to harvest this power, like, you know, and really, like, become a great waterbender. And then her brother is sort of downplaying it in my eyes because he doesn't want her to have some superior quality over him. Like, he's in charge. All the men left. He's there. It's his job to train the little adorable Eskimo children of the water tribe. And, like, none of them, he, like, I feel like he would never let, like, Katara, like, make a bubble around a fish around them, because they'd be more interested in what she has to do, and it would undermine his authority. So I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, if they're afraid of her waterbending, or they just want to, like, it to, because in a sense it's going to die out with her if they don't let her, like, train. I don't know. I guess I just don't know that much about the world, but I feel like they're just, like, sort of letting waterbending die out in a way. And I don't know why.
Yes. No comment.
Okay. And that's fine. That's fine. I am willing to totally contribute. We need more newbies on here so I can talk with someone.
Yeah. When it comes to Sokka, yeah, I think he's rather uncomfortable about it. And I don't think it's necessarily a black and white jealousy situation. I mean, it might be at this point. It sort of changes. But yeah, he's definitely uncomfortable about it. I think probably because, you know, unlike times of the past where it's like, you know, every second or third person or every one in 10 or whatever is a bender, you know, this is the only, exposition that he has to it. It's not exactly like a, you know, Petunia Dursley and Lily Evans situation. Like, he's not that crazy about it, but he's kind of not used to it. But as far as the grandmother goes and everything like that, no comment on that for right now. But in terms of the magic, you know, bending and magic, I mean, Michal, Caitlin, did either of you have a good definition for that or a good explanation?
I mean, I honestly like that it's more treated as like a heritage type of thing. You know, it's more something that they are, and the uniqueness of each bending art becomes like an important theme in the series, you know, especially with Aang being the last airbender. But yeah, I mean, I like that it's almost like, you know, some tradition that you've had handed down, you know, but only certain people just like have a particular talent for it. You know, but like for example, nowadays, like somebody from a culture that's, you know, largely died out wouldn't necessarily, they could be really good at it, but they wouldn't have somebody to teach them.
Yeah.
And so that's more how I think about it. Like the world of Avatar is very like blurry in terms of magic and spiritualism. It's Like, it's more just like this stuff is an extension of your psyche, and you know, and you see that a lot. Like the way different people use their bending reflects very strongly kind of what they how they approach life and what their other connections are. And so I kind of see it more thematically than just like, you know, plot magic or something like that.
Yeah. They do make a point to hammer at home quite a lot. So, yeah, it is something sort of very, very natural. And, yeah, it's, you know, there's definitely the whole, you know, spirit world, you know, avatar balance between the spirit world and real world. But, yeah, I've never seen it as like a kind of magic-y supernatural show in that way. So they do a good job of really creating its own identity for bending. I'm not really sure if I've seen something like that in another show that's similar. And obviously the elemental themes are quite common in various formats, but it has really created its own legacy in the same way that people know what Hogwarts house they are, that, you know, they know what avatar, you know, if they know the show, what kind of a bender they'd be, or what nation they'd belong to. I really want to do that on this show, but I don't want to do it too soon, but in case it gives.
So you're all firebenders, right? That's what I'm getting from this.
do we want to do this now, guys?
No, don't do it yet, because I don't want to associate your personalities with benders yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it might be like a spoily thing, but
just my assumption.
We should definitely do that. But so just to finish up with the actual episode of that we're talking about, the pilot episode, specific scenes. What was your specific favorite scene from this one? Caitlin, do you want to go first?
My favorite scene, because Brittany took mine, was Sokka quote-unquote training the kids.
Because I gotta see!
It's funny, but it's also kind of sad in that, you know, he sees, you see how serious Sokka is taking his responsibility as, like, the man of the tribe, and how he's really the only one, but he's so serious about it. So it tells you a lot about him, even though the scene has a lot of comic relief with the potty break.
It's mine in the next episode is very much a tie into that element of soccer, and it's so, yeah, it is so funny and so sad. It's so layered already, this show, and he's got such a naivety, but such like a pressure, and he takes it so seriously, and because he doesn't really have anything else to do, he's very much at a loss at how else he can do things, and you know, the fact that it involves the little kids looks like he is kind of just playing around, but then you sort of see what that turns into, and when he's actually faced with a threat, like how he reacts to it, and it's just so crushing. And yeah, Sokka was my favorite character sort of from the start, if you know what I mean. He's not necessarily who ends up being my favorite character, but like at this point, Sokka was my big standout character, and I really, poor boy. But Michal, what was yours then in that case?
My favorite scene, where did I write it? I really like, you know, like I said before, you know, the opening with Sokka and Katara just kind of going through like these ice flows and like introducing this idea of bending and of like they're kind of being alone and having to, you know, do like kind of make their own way. I found it unique. I find it like really interesting that that's the particular emotional note that they started on. That's definitely, I think, my favorite scene for this episode.
Cool. Yeah, it is a great opening. I think that it is, as I said, a really unusual setup for a pilot, and yet it does work well. And, you know, it's very good, this show, at world building. There was never a moment, even though right from the start, even, can we talk 1 second about the animals? Like, I don't know, this is going to get so much more intense later on, but you right away you see, like, the tiger seals, and, you know, you see the penguins later, which, yeah, Brittany, you noticed that those aren't actually penguins, right?
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, because they're so cute, but they don't look like penguins.
They're penguin seals, and this isn't a massive spoiler, but Avatar, one of the other aspects besides bending that makes the Avatar world weird, which the world doesn't have a name, by the way, like it's just the world. They have a South Pole, North Pole. I don't know if it's like an alternate version of this planet or something, but they have some weird animal breeds that are like hybrids of, you know, two animals in this world. And I won't give it, you know, any of them away because lots of them are very delightful to discover. But for example, those penguins, they call them penguins, but they're technically penguin seals. They're sort of a weird combination of penguins and seals.
Well, whatever they are, they're adorable.
I know, I love them. I will say I have a, I have on my mantelpiece a little model, actually, my housemate molded, like, from clay and painted at university, that is one of the combination animals from this show. I won't spoil it, but I'll show you a picture of it at some point when we get to them. But yeah, so that's your scene was the penguin sledding, though, Brittany, your favorite scene. Did you enjoy that? I take it.
Yeah, I also love, like, the actual art of penguin sledding, because it looks like an art form. But also just when you first meet Aang, and that's, like, his first words. Like, do you want to go penguin sledding? I was like, yeah, I do, because that sounds awesome. I want to go penguin sledding. So I think, like, the combination of the whole penguin sledding setup, like, yeah, it sort of just, like, introduced how playful he's going to be, at least to start.
Yeah, because he's, like, he doesn't really know what's going on or anything, and he's just, like, you know, playing almost a joke straight away, being like, come closer, come closer, and then sort of bursts into life, which is fantastic. I mean, one thing that sort of we had here originally, in terms of about him asking that penguin sledding question, like, do we think that he was, you know, in full control and firing on all cylinders, or do you think that he just literally thought it was still, you know, 5 minutes earlier and that he was about to go penguin sledding? Or what did you guys think of that whole penguin sledding wake up situation, by the way?
Well, I wasn't sure. So wherever the airbenders were 100 years ago, there had to have been penguins, I would think, unless just woke up. Well, because if he just, like, woke up and, like, snapped into, like, an ice world, he would be like, oh, I guess there are penguins here. Let's go penguin sledding. Uh-huh. So I was a little confused because he never really seemed upset ever, being like, oh, yeah, everyone's gone, and I'm 100 years later, and he just, like, sort of, like, moves on. But I guess it was only, like, it's a 20-minute show. So
yeah, I mean,
to have Aang moping for 15 minutes of it would have been a little.
The fact that he's 100 years old and everyone is dead will definitely be addressed. Let's just say that.
Okay,
that would definitely be addressed. And yeah, the iceberg, I think he knows where he is. He knows he's in the South Pole. Like, he knows he's not at home. And because he has a flying bison, I assume that he has been to a few of these places before. I don't think that's a particular spoiler. That's more just me sort of logicking it out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's totally fine.
And yeah, but yes, you will. Yes, Aang is very happy-go-lucky. It's a very big part of what he's about. And yes, you'll definitely see him sort of process the actual facts of that situation. Okay. I just found it sort of hilarious that he's just like, you know, straight up in someone's face about that, like, very earnest, very you know, unthreatened by any situation. Did you think it was cute or slightly ridiculous, Caitlin, or any thoughts about that whole penguin sledding scenario?
I mean, when he wakes up and that's the first thing he says is a little ridiculous, but I think that's the point, is to show that that's Aang's personality. Like, he's gonna be that happy-go-lucky character, and he's gonna be, he's gonna do things you don't expect, and he's gonna be a little silly when this is immediately after he's had this amazing, like, light show that opened up the iceberg. So you're expecting something really intense, and then it's like penguin sledding. So it's just sort of, this is the dichotomy you're gonna get from this character, and it's set up like with one line.
Yeah. My favorite scene was basically Iroh on the ship kind of ignoring Zuko's ridiculousness. You know, when, you know, he's demanding, sort of Zuko's demanding to be trained, which, you know, by Iroh, and being taught more advanced moves. And you sort of get the impression that Iroh is, you know, a little bit of a Yoda character, and that he clearly has, you know, a bunch of power and knowledge, but he's very, very chill about it all. I just think that was a really good setup of that relationship, and also, you know, hilarious. But the, when we get to our favorite lines in one moment, the quote that Mikhail has picked is, you know, very much also a part of that, in that it's, you know, giving an impression about firebending and about bending in general. I think it sets up a lot for, you know, as not clues exactly, but it kind of sets up a lot in terms of, I don't know, what to potentially expect, or a little bit of three-dimensionalness about the Fire Nation, at which point are very, very, very much painted to be the villains. But more so than that, I just like the hilarity and ridiculousness of Zuko stomping around and screaming, and Iroh eating his duck and drinking his tea. I find it completely delightful every time. So, yeah, that was me. I mean, going straight into the quotes right off the back of that, Mikhail, do you want to talk about yours?
Yeah, my favorite quote is from that scene when Iroh says, "Power in firebending comes from the breath, not the muscles. The breath becomes energy in the body. The energy extends past your limbs and becomes fire." And I just love, first of all, anytime Iroh drops, like, wisdom knowledge, I'm all there. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I love that that's kind of the closest explanation we get to bending in general, at least early on. But there is this idea that it's internal, you know, and obviously bending is very martial in the way it's used frequently. But just this idea that, like, you have this, I mean, Zuko comes across as super violent from, like, basically the second you meet him. But Iroh, his approach is just completely different. You know, it's not about violence. It's not about domination. It's about your internal mental state, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea of, like, energy extending past your limbs and becoming fire, because that's just so cool.
Yeah. I think energy is a good way to put it in terms of bending, like, aside from, you know, if you're putting it apart from magic, it is more just natural energy. But yes, it's, you know, it's a good explanation and a nice moment from Iroh. Of course, Zuko is, you know, an ungrateful little brat right
Zuko's
now.
Zuko's like, power!
Yeah. So, Caitlin, how about you?
So along those lines, mine was when Iroh, they're on the ship, Iroh was kind of trying to get Zuko to settle down, and he invites him to come sit and play a game and have some tea, and Zuko says, "I don't need any calming tea." And if you could see the dog, he's got like this epic frowny face right next to it, because he's just so angry about it. Don't need any calming tea. And that's just,
it's iconic. Zuko. It's just, yeah, I wanted that line badly. But yeah, Caitlin's taken both of the Zuko moments for quotes that I also put down. So I see this is gonna be a race to get our quotes in the doc from now on, because I'm feeling this is gonna continue. But yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, don't worry, for the time being, I won't be putting any Zuko quotes, because I do not like him.
I cannot wait for the first day that a newbie puts down a Zuko quote. It's going to be a triumph. But yeah, mine, I did go though, that my favorite besides from that was actually probably Katara and Aang on the battleship, the shipwreck. Katara's kind of puzzling out how old Aang is and how long he's been in the iceberg. Oh, sorry. And Aang goes, Aang just goes, that's impossible. Do I look like a 112-year-old man? And his delivery is just, I don't know. I just found his delivery hysterical. I actually don't have a great amount of patience for Aang quite a lot of the time. I like him and I appreciate him, but he tires me out and I can't. And a lot of the time, like a lot of his bouncy ridiculousness is a bit much for me, but sometimes he delivers a line like this and I just love it so much. And I think he can be so, so, so funny. Just when he gets a little bit like, I don't know, when he gets pulled up on things like this, and I just love it. So yeah. And it is also funny because, I mean, you don't know too much about the Avatar and what it is yet, but you know, given the idea that he's meant to be this like spiritual beacon in the world and be this very iconic figure, you know, the idea of him as a small child, you know, in contrast to, you know, an old wise man is actually something that's really, really funny and ends up being a big part of the show. So obviously though, that every Avatar is going to start as a child at some point. But yeah, I liked that moment also because it kind of, you know, obviously sets up a lot in terms of the problems of Aang being here now. But Brittany, you ended up picking a quote that was to do with someone that we haven't talked about yet, our good friend Appa.
Yeah, so when Aang introduces him, he goes, "This is Appa, my flying bison," and Sokka replies, "Right, and this is Katara, my flying sister." So it kind of just, like, I love that, like, you really get, like, a sense of everyone in that scene. Yeah. Like, Sokka's just being like, okay, this kid is really getting on my nerves now, and
possibly Aang is crazy. Just,
yeah, and Aang's just, like, this still, like, hey, well, do you want to meet my bison? Like, I have a bison over here. And I thought that Appa was really cute and lazy and kind of exactly what I was feeling when I was watching it. I was like, oh, yeah, I just want to nap.
Appa's great. Oh, God. I just got a flash forward to an important Appa episode. Oh, wow. Anyway, I keep, you know, thinking of the road ahead and getting very overwhelmed, basically. This is going to be a fun trip. all right. Anyone got anything just in general about the pilot before we move on to the second episode and go through that one?
No.
Everyone good? Cool. Okay. Jumping into episode 2, The Avatar Returns. Does anyone want to turn at reading the synopsis, or shall I do it?
I can do it. I feel like I haven't talked a lot.
Go ahead. Please go ahead.
Okay. So episode 2 is titled The Avatar Returns. And picking up where the pilot left off, Aang spots the Fire Nation ship heading toward the village. In the meantime, Sokka attempts to fend off an indignant Zuko up until Aang slides in via Penguin, only to give himself up in exchange for protection of the tribe. Sokka and Katara ride Appa to rescue Aang while Aang stages his escape on the ship itself. The first epic battle between Zuko and Aang takes place, but when Aang is pushed into the freezing water, he falls into a trance where his eyes and tattoos glow. He impressively bends a cyclone of water, defeating Zuko, and soon collapses. Katara finishes off the Fire Army with a makeshift Ron from the Chamber of Secrets, backwards wand action, and Aang redirects a fire blast at the tundra, disabling the Fire Nation ship. After saying goodbye to Gran Gran, Katara, Sokka, and Aang board Appa, beginning their trip to the Northern Water Tribe for Aang and Katara's waterbending teachings, with a few fun stops on the way. That was a lot of names.
Sorry. Yeah. I have no idea what he's talking about with the Ron from Chamber of Secrets backwards wand action. Is that like, Do you mean like him getting hit with the slug, like slug curse? I don't even know.
I think so. I think that's exactly what he meant, because like that's what I thought when I read it.
Okay. So the big focus of this is obviously the Fire Nation honing in on the village, coming to attack, and basically Aang, you know, sort of witnessing all this happening and immediately, or, you know, coming to the conclusion that he has to go and give himself up and go with him. So, I mean, Aang and Zuko's first fight, has a few aspects of things that we're going to look at more on the show, like the choreography of bending, like how destructive firebending can be compared to all of the other elements. What did you guys think of actually seeing a big bending battle for the first time?
Well, I guess I'll go first since it was my first bending battle ever.
Yeah.
I thought that it was a little long because it's only a 22-minute show, which I'm still getting used to, because all of a sudden I was like, oh, I can watch another one. It's only been 40 minutes.
Mm.
But I have to stop myself. But I loved it. I always like whenever like you take like those like what superpower would you have like type mm-hmm. things, I always like go for stuff that like can like do what these guys are doing, like moving things mm-hmm. or stuff like that. So I really liked watching it, and I especially liked like seeing Aang use the water, because like he clearly has all these powers that he does, I'm sure we'll talk about this more later, that he is not aware of because he sort of like blacks out when he uses them. So I thought that was really awesome to see, as opposed to like the only water bending you see before is sort of like Katara just like making a bubble, and like even in the fight she sort of just like has to like, you know, splash water on these guys. So I thought it was really impressive. And I do have a quick question though. The firebenders who are on the ship, like they all can bend fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just, for some reason I thought that they were not actually bending fire. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, they're members of the army that, I guess, have been sent around with Zuko, like troops that are serving on the ship. So I assume, like, the Fire Nation army, unless they're, like, just lackeys, are all bender powers, because I guess one of the big points is that firebending, you know, by the nature of it, is the most destructive element. Like, you can use any of the bending's powers to damage or kill. Like, you're gonna see, you know, you saw your first use here as of ice, you know, of water bending into ice, which can be very dangerous. Earth bending, you know, rocks and stuff like that will come, you know, you could throw rocks at people if you're an earthbender, though we haven't seen any of that yet. But fire is inherently more destructive, and there's not much, you know, you'd have to really think about what you could do with it that wasn't destructive. So, I mean, given that, does that make you assume from, like, or did you, when you first watched the show, like, make you assume that, like, all firebenders are more violent, like, and bad? Like, is it a situation like assuming all Slytherins are bad? Like, what did you guys think of firebending from the start, basically?
Well, I just assumed they were bad because of the opening montage where they outrank every other bender in number, I think. I don't know much about earth benders, but I assume they outrank in number. And like you were saying, they do have a very destructive power. Like, it's kind of hard because if they were to set fire to something, you have to focus on putting out that fire as opposed to stopping them in the immediate reactory is probably not a word, but your immediate reaction would be to stop the destruction as opposed to stopping the person causing it.
Mm. And what did you think of sort of Aang? What did you guys think of Aang giving himself up immediately? Like, did that sort of say anything to you about himself or about what the Avatar is straight away?
It's telling.
Yeah.
Because these people, or most of them, have been very anti airbender since he arrived. You know, they kicked him out and made him leave, and he comes back and just immediately gives himself up for their safety. Like, that's very telling of who Aang is as a person.
Yeah, and you hear a bit, like, about him in terms of, like, you know, being raised by monks and his attitude. Air is pretty much the alternate to fire. Like, it is the direct opposite in terms of it's probably the least destructive element, and it seems to be the most, from what we've seen of the different nations so far, like, the most, you know, breeds the most peaceful kind of persona and situation. So it must have been interesting for him to, you know, just go into that straight away and not really know what he was going or why these people wanted to take him or anything like that. Okay, I suppose let's talk about the kind of, you know, the Aang and Katara situation right now. In the doc, Mitch has mentioned the ship of Aang and Katara, which, you know, is slightly present in this episode. Did you guys, like, this Avatar fandom is a massive shipping fandom. It's you know, it's very, very popular among various shippers and various pairings that argue with each other and all that kind of stuff that happens in a fandom. Were any of you guys, like, quite into shipping it? You know, any ships stood out to you when you first watched it, or were you kind of, like, not thinking about it in that way?
I certainly was not thinking about it at all, because I was trying to figure out a lot more than who's going to end up with, if anyone, mainly because they're so young, and I guess because it is a cartoon, my mind instantly did not go there, even though I'm watching this as an adult.
Yeah, Caitlin, Michal, did either of you kind of think about, like, the shipping in terms of this show, like, when you first watched it?
I have a ship, but we haven't met both parties in it yet, so no comment.
Have we met one of the two?
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna try and get this out of you later. How about you, Michal? Did you end up sort of thinking about any ships immediately?
Immediately, no. Although, I do think that Aang and Katara's meeting is sort of supposed to be planting seeds for things, with the whole, like, oh my gosh, this beautiful girl has appeared in front of me, and she has hair loopies and whatever. I shipped a ship that shall not be shipped.
Oh, really?
Oh, you know what it is. It hasn't really become relevant yet, but I will be very interested to see how our newbies pick up on it.
I'm gonna need to message both of you about this, because this is gonna kill me it's gonna kill me doing this show and, like, not being able to say things.
I sort of shipped it less as time went on and other options became available, but
oh my gosh, I don't know how I could ship a cartoon character.
Brittany, it is insane, the shipping.
Oh my god.
It's, like, not normal.
It's one of the worst fandoms for shipping. Like, I say worst, like, worst or best, depending on what you think about it. There's two major ships that involve Katara that are, wow, like, the wars in that fandom.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's wow. Mm-hmm. Like, whoa.
Oh my god,
Mine was the other one.
Yeah, I kind of figured. Ugh. Yeah. Ugh. Sorry. I won't do that.
Over, like, I don't know, 14 shipped the first one.
No, because it was weird. Like, it's kind of weird to think about. But anyway, I was okay.
Don't spoil this in the comments, by the way, people. Like,
yeah, don't.
If you know what we're talking about, then you know what we're talking about. But don't, like, you know.
I was pretty cool with most of the canon, like, and the ending up canon situations, if you know what I mean. There's a few things I've browsed. I can't say I've ever been involved in the shipping fandom in a big way. There's a lot of, and I mean, the show doesn't really shy away from it. That's the thing. Like, you'll go on and you'll see that, there are, you know, a lot of yeah, they're quite young, like especially Aang is 12, but the romance element is addressed, and there's, you know, situations where they're, you know, teens out on the road with no parental supervision and staying in tents together, and anything can happen.
And flower necklaces.
Oh my god, yeah, thank you. Thank you for picking up what I'm putting down there. But you know, it's just, I think that this show actually implies a fair amount of adult relations for a cartoon kids show.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I think they actually do it quite well. And they take it quite
super
seriously.
Subtle. It's not anything that like a parent would have to be concerned about or anything. You know?
I think they do it well, and they take it quite seriously. Like, you know, I think that it's quite realistic in terms of teens. Aang is obviously very young, but he is old enough to be interested.
He's 112.
Yeah, so. He's 112. He can do whatever. Anyway, let's move on from this before it deteriorates very badly. So yeah, but the Katara and Aang situation is very much, you know, hinted at in terms of, you know, him doing his flying around and showing off and looking at, you know, oh, are you approving of me? And, you know, them staring at each other on the bison and, you know, after he rescues her and, sorry, after she rescues him. And all of that kind of situation. It's very much little crush kind of thing at the moment, which is cute. I mean, some people probably find it annoying when I alternate, but it's fine.
I mean, it's also a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah. Is that...
I think this is probably a good point to bring this up now.
Yeah.
Coming into this as a newbie and having not watched it, like, and immersed myself in it, I'm coming into it as, like, this is something that would air after SpongeBob. So I think my mindset is just not... in watching it as an adult.
But then I remember a lot of Nickelodeon shows that were kind of animated but older teen animation that did involve a lot of like young teen issues, like I don't know, I'm just
No, I definitely agree that that is what this is doing. I just, for my own personal viewing, I don't really have like a
okay
what a animated
no I would say down. keep that attitude, and then because that attitude will let you have a better perspective on certain episodes, and then will allow you to be just like gloriously surprised with other episodes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was thinking, I guess what I was trying to get at with that point was, is this going to inhibit my viewing? But as now I feel better about it.
My opinion of that situation is that, I don't think that, you know, them being animated, and I think that the quality of the show results in these characters being just as real to me as non-animated characters, if that makes sense. Like, you know, and having the say, and whether it's, you know, and like shipping aside and like age, you know, that's the fandom, whatever. But the emotional capacity, the complexity of the characters, and even the look of the characters in various stages of their lives, it becomes as real to me as a non-animated show is, if that makes sense. It does not bring it down a level to like, oh, this is animated and, you know, this is, so therefore it's not as that it doesn't have that material in it. To me, it ends up really being equal to anything I've ever watched in, you know, that has real people that you can sort of project onto. These characters become that real to me. So that's sort of where I'm at about it. Yeah. I think that you will care about it just as much as you, you know, would have the capacity to care about it if it wasn't. But I think that the animated element also adds something really cool, obviously, where they can do a lot of things more easily than they would have been able to if it was live action all that kind of things. Like, that's a huge benefit, and, you know, something that potentially, you know, if more people could make animated shows that were this kind of quality and show characters this complexly in an animated scenario, you'd have a lot more fun with, like, adaptations of, you know, of film, of books or, you know, situations that are, you know, maybe not that easily done through a live action film, or, you know, whether it's because of special effects or because it takes place over like hundreds of years or something. And yeah, animation is something that obviously gives you a lot of opportunities there, but not very many people can get it right for the actual content. But yeah, this does a good job. Sokka, in this episode, we see him also having a go at fighting. He has his spear and his trusty boomerang, and he kind of has never, you know, not let the fact that he can't bend bother him, but at the moment it's just been him and Katara, like it hasn't been him against a whole bunch of benders. But he goes right in, like, you know, even when he is, that the ship is coming at him and he is the only person to protect the tribe in his head, he's still standing right in front of it, right until the ship comes up and you know, is right in his face. And that's, I don't know, you could view that as so ridiculous, but I view it just so tragic and so brave that it just kills me. So, again, like, what do you think of Sokka, again, just one episode in terms of, like, sort of comedic relief versus his, you know, actual situation?
I love this moment because this, for me, kind of redeems Sokka's, like, slightly jerk-facedness slash, like, oh my god, I have to train the two-year-olds to fight, you know?
Yeah.
Because he puts his money where his mouth is, you know? He, like when push comes to shove, he's not just, like, doing this for bravado or because, yeah, like, he thinks he has to be manly. I mean, that's part of the reason why he's doing it, but ultimately, like, he's really trying to protect his tribe. He's willing to do that, you know? He's willing to, like, stand in the face of, like, insane, crazy odds. And, yeah, so to me, I mean, I feel like if you were kind of skeptical about Sokka and thinking maybe he was more, like, more bravado than, I don't know, proof or whatever, I think this really shows him coming through in that way. And it's something that, like, really, yeah, that it's a good start to Sokka's kind of plot line with that.
Yeah. I mean, that was the big thing for me as well, that, you know, I was trying to describe, which is that, yeah, he's training those kids, which is sort of seen as a ridiculous joke. And he's there alone, like, you know, as a guy, you know, not old enough to be a man, but not young enough to, you know, be free of responsibilities. And, you know, the expectation of that would be that he is sort of all talk, like a bit Gilderoy Lockhart, you know, sort of, I don't know if that's a really bad comparison.
So many Chamber of Secrets.
Oh, wow, references. Right, yeah. It's a really bad comparison, but having, you know, all of that, you know, having never being all talk about something before and never being faced with it, but he, right, you know, goes and tries to be the man and, like, put on the tribal makeup, you know, and go out and stand up to it. And then he and Zuko obviously have a bit of an altercation as well, where, you know, Zuko gets hit over the head with the trusty boomerang, which is also hilarious. But yeah, I mean, obviously as well at this point, he's also facing off a bunch of benders, which he's never really experienced ever before. And he's going to meet a lot more in future. And, I mean, yeah, that's something that's set up for him as well, like that he's the guy with the boomerang that never asked for any of this. And it's, I don't know, he does start off a little bit shaky in terms of, you know, his arrogance and all of that. But I think all of the characters, I think, without giving too much away, I think that arrogance is a flaw that every lead character on this show has, if that makes sense. And they all sort of encounter that in their own ways. And yeah, it's a fun journey for everyone. How about the glowing eyes trance? Brittany, what was your impression of that? Like, when we see Aang sort of go in, you know, and having his eyes and tattoos glow and falling into the sea. And I think we see the eyes and tattoos glow in the first episode as well.
Well, I think it just sort of, like, what I took away from it is that he has all of these inherent powers because he is the Avatar, but he's not entirely sure how to use them yet, but the powers are stronger than his, like, will to control them. So, like, if he's in imminent danger, like, he was, like, sort of plummeting to the bottom of the ocean there, they sort of were just like, okay, we'll take over from here until you learn how to use us, and sort of help him out. But I don't think that's always going to be the case.
Yeah, that's pretty much, none of that is wrong, pretty much. I will say that none of that is wrong. I mean, given, I guess, what you saw in this episode, what is your understanding of what the Avatar is?
Well, I assumed that the Avatar was kind of like, almost like a peacekeeper. Like, he was supposed to keep everyone in check, because, like, when you see in the opening sequence, it's sort of the Avatar's, like, kind of floating there, and the Avatar can control, like, every power. So, or I guess power is about every type of element that there
element
is. Yeah, element. Element, there it is.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like to keep everyone in check, but since there's only one left and the Fire Nation now is so gung-ho about ruling the world that the Avatar is sort of like, there is seen as a threat. That's what I took away from Zuko's, like, mission to get him. So the Avatar is this threat to them dominating, so the Avatar will eventually return to power.
Yeah. I don't think any of that's, I don't think any of that's particularly inaccurate, and I probably wouldn't tell you if you
were. Well, it could be completely wrong, but I've only seen 40 minutes of content.
Yeah, no, I was curious as to what you had so far, basically. I think that's all pretty spot on, though. Obviously, there's going to be a lot more to it than that. But yeah, just the Avatar. I mean, the Avatar being gone and the Fire Nation taking over, you know, they've only done that since the Avatar has been gone, basically.
Yeah.
So the balance thing that they talk about in the intro is a very important thing, and obviously without him being gone, that balance has been disrupted. Yeah. So basically, once they end up rescuing him, they decide to go with him, or to kind of chase him and go with him off on their journey to, I guess, his first, you know, his aim is to go to the North Pole and help Katara with waterbending. Seems to be his primary goal right now, with a few fun stops along the way. You know, what did everyone kind of think of, you know, what to expect in terms of this journey around the world? And did you think it was sort of slightly ridiculous that Aang was going across the globe to surf on various animals? And do you think that, you know, it's odd that he's helping Katara to do this immediately and not focusing on his, you know, 100-year-old sleep and the fact that they've told him that all of the other airbenders are dead, or that Zuko is chasing him and trying to do who knows what with him? I mean, you know, setting off on this journey, which originally sort of against the will of their family, I guess, for Katara and Sokka with this guy that they sort of met 2 days ago who seems to be a crazy person. What did you guys sort of think of the initial, you know, leaving of the South Pole?
Well, I thought it was good because, like, you kind of see the grandmother at the end is a little, like, encouraging more so than when they were initially going off. And I think that they know that the danger is out there, and maybe they want Katara to kind of hone her skills now.
Mm. Yeah.
Or maybe not.
I mean, I've never been, you know, quite 100% certain why the family was okay with them going off. But, I mean, at this point, you know, if Zuko's driving the boat up right to their village, it's like they're no safer there than anywhere else, really, I suppose.
# destiny. So.
Thanks for that contribution. Yeah. I mean, I think that the idea of these teenagers going off with this other small child around the world on the back of a flying bison is, again, a pretty good indication of the, you know, of the world that they're in, and, like, the fact that, you know, teenagers in this day and age would be considered real children, but these people are sort of considered, you know, vague adults by their community, and that it's not, you know, they're not so protected, or that they're at least being going out in the world to try and be independent and do their thing. But I guess at this point, you know, without spoiling, what are you guys most excited to see for their journey? Like, Brittany, what are you most curious about at the moment, having seen these two episodes?
I guess I'm really curious to see the Northern Water Tribe, only because the Southern one is so tiny and small, and they don't really seem to care that much. Like, at least from what I've seen, they don't really seem to care that much about the water bending. So I'd like to see Katara around water benders. I think that's what I'm looking forward to.
Cool. And what about you guys, Mikhail? What's yours? I mean, not a specific event, but, like, in concept, in general, of where we are now in the show.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially the first time I was watching it, I was definitely looking forward to more kind of emotional stuff, like more exploration of the airbenders and what exactly happened there, and, you know, the impact that would have on Aang. And yeah, I like that. That's not something that the show forgets about. I'll just say.
Caitlin?
I'd say at this point I was really looking forward just to seeing the world itself expand, because the South Pole is so insular as a community, and kind of going back to the grandmother letting them leave, I think she, with some previous knowledge that I won't comment on, understands that Katara and Sokka, with their really developing relationship with Aang, are bigger, or meant for bigger things than this very small community. So is kind of willing to let them go explore their hashtag destiny.
Mm-hmm. Oh God.
So I'll just say it. So I think there's an understanding that they are all meant for bigger things, and I'm looking forward to the exploration of what those bigger things are.
Yeah, I mean, what you said about the kind of the way the world looks as well, even in the intro to this, the, you know, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked intro, which, by the way, Brittany, you may or may not have picked up either from every fandom on Tumblr ever, or, you know, just in general, the intro moment of the, you know, of Katara's sort of voiceover, you know, describing what happened. Everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked is it's a very important phrase on the internet, just so you know. But now that you know it, you will see it everywhere in fandoms, kind of.
Yeah, I probably haven't.
Reaction kind of thing.
Yeah, I probably haven't seen it, or I've seen it a million times and never did anything. Like, took anything from it.
But just the way that even that animation looks, and kind of the way that the map of the world and, you know, the look of everything, the Fire Nation's whole, like, why they had the Industrial Revolution and nowhere else has, if you know what I mean, like, kind of situation. That all sort of made me curious. But I think, like Mikhail, I want to see the Aang, you know, start dealing with the situation that he's in and not be so unfazed, if you know what I mean, is what's making me the most curious at the moment. Anything else sort of thematically with this episode, or any kind of discussion points aside from our quotes and moments that we're going to go into?
Well, I like the confrontation with Zuko, I mean, and the Water Tribe, just, like, that he's not, like, this completely unreasonable, like, totally murderous, you know, whatever. He is willing to, like, let, you know, he's there for Aang. He's not there to, like, destroy the Water Tribe. So, and he doesn't, like, seem to be like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to kill all of you, you know. So just to, I guess, to like, add, like, maybe a slight shadow to his so far, you know, black and whiteness.
Yeah, I did actually totally forget, like, yeah. I haven't watched it in a couple of years, and I did actually totally forget, like, when he grabbed Gran Gran, I was like, oh my god, is he threatening, like, is he gonna, like, threaten her, be like, if you don't give me the Avatar, I'll smash this woman or something, but it was like, no, and just when he's like, he'd be about this age, master of all elements, and then so it's just like, he doesn't know how to function, and it's, I hesitate to say adorable, but I want to say adorable, just so you all know. I want to say adorable, even though I know it's a terrible, terrible choice. I liked that as well, and I mean, it follows on from the you know, that moment of Sokka's as well, and it just, I don't know, it's just kind of, no one is quite what you expect at this point, and they, you know, sort of keep surprising me and keep putting little bits in, you know, relatively quickly, to build up dimensions of the characters, which I think is a really good thing. I mean, that, as in terms of favorite scenes, that was kind of, that entire situation was kind of mine. Like Sokka, as I've talked about, in his makeup, facing the ship and having that bravery, and then sort of Zuko tossing the grandmother aside, that combination was my favorite entirety, so I don't really need to go out about that one on too much. But Brittany, what was your favorite scene in the episode?
Okay, so my favorite scene was actually witnessing Aang waterbend, even though he, like, was not really conscious of it. It just showed, like, another element being used in, like, full power, and what Katara could have the potential to do with her waterbending skills. So I really liked watching that. Plus, I think the animation is so cool of actually watching it happen.
Mm.
So that was my favorite scene.
How about you, Michal?
So yeah, my favorite scene is Aang's escape from the ship, or like the beginning of his escape. I love watching him airbend, and just like his, the lightness of his movements, and the like knowing some of Airbender philosophy from later episodes, like you can really see it at play here. The way Aang approaches physical conflict, you know, is kind of the same way that he approaches a lot of emotional conflict and its personal conflict. But yeah, so I love watching him, you know, like dart around Zuko and like climb on the walls and like, you know, with his hands tied together, and just like, this is a, you know, an stumbling on Iroh, who's sleeping, mm-hmm. and just be like, oh, never mind, sorry. I just really like I think this is a really great first impression of the way that he approaches conflict, and, you know, which is sort of non-violently, which is kind of like more making people look silly than hurting them, and yeah, just with this incredible lightness, and I really enjoy watching that.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into the philosophies of the different bending as well, like the what makes it different besides just the physical element, because that was, oh, there's a bit that's so important to me much further down the track. But when Aang discovers sort of the theory behind all of that, that is, I think it'll be after that episode, after that theory, that we'll be doing a whole which bender, what nation are you? Because that comes into it a lot as well, I think. It's such a complex and exciting kind of concept, all of it. I really love it. Caitlin, how about you?
So mine was when Katara and Sokka have gone off on Appa to go rescue Aang, and they're trying to figure out how to get him to fly. And Sokka's just droll, go, fly, soar, like thinking of every synonym he can to get Appa to fly before he gets it. It's just Katara's trying to like appeal to him as Aang's friend, and Sokka's just like, up, ascend, elevate. Like, it's just so funny.
It is.
Yeah, I love that scene.
It was beautiful. It was great. It's, I don't know, it's just so funny. I mean, I had no relative amount about the sort of creation of the show and how they came up with it and stuff, but just the amount of, like, new ideas and kind of and humor that they put into the first couple of episodes of a completely new world, you know, and that it's really, you know, they were taking a lot of risks and they really knocked it out of the park in terms of, like, what the audience was going to be. And I know it didn't do fantastically well when it was on the air, but, like, the quality, like, I'm glad they didn't sacrifice their vision, if you know what I mean, because the quality of so many aspects is, you know, it has its ups and down moments, but in general, the, you know, the humor that they don't dumb down and the kind of the strangeness that they don't change is all really, really brilliant to me. So I love that aspect as well.
And there's the fact that the show is now about 40 minutes old and it's already making fun of itself.
Mm.
You know, which I just adore.
Yeah, it's they're so clever, like they're so good, and it's, yeah, it's such a gift, this show. It'll be exciting to relive this all again. How about quotes that, like, their own actual quotes? Mikhail, do you want to go first with yours?
Yeah, my favorite line from this one is when, you know, it's all, like, sad and Aang is, you know, leaving and then he goes, like, oh, I haven't cleaned my room in 100 years. Not looking forward to that. Which is just, like, this great way of kind of, you know, lightening up that moment and, again, kind of showing you what Aang is really like, what he's really about. And yeah, it's just like, I like you, Natalie, I don't always link in with Aang's type of humor, but sometimes he'll just, like, say something and I'm just like, you are, like, so ridiculously silly and hilarious that it's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I think that moment's also a bit, like, of a sign of him not, either kind of not really processing or very much repressing what his situation is, given that he's, you know, heard these things, that it doesn't really seem to be addressing them. But
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing that he really doesn't, it's probably smart, you know, for the show not to get into the consequences of things that happen, that I think the next episode really goes much more deeply into, if I recall. But yeah, no, so it's good, and it kind of, right, like, in retrospect, it takes on a little bit more meaning, but I still think it's just a really good line in the flow of things.
Okay. How about you, Brittany? What was your favorite line this episode?
My favorite line was when Sokka says, "I'm just a guy with a boomerang. I didn't ask for all this flying and magic." it's because he's, like, frozen to, his legs are frozen on the ship and they're trying to escape and they're like, hurry up. And he's, like, sort of, like, has his, like, little, like, boomerang. He's, like, chopping away at the ice and he's just frustrated and just has to get, like, they're all telling him to hurry up. And meanwhile, he didn't have any of the bending powers to begin with. So now he's just, like, hacking away, trying to get free.
Yeah, that's,
oh, Sokka, it doesn't get any better.
No, it really doesn't. That's two things. Be prepared for a lot of more boomerang humor. And be prepared for a lot more other people forgetting that Sokka doesn't have bending powers and they can't necessarily keep up in every situation. It's two very reoccurring themes that, without spoiling anything, are going to provide, you know, humor, well, potentially angst, mainly humor, in the future. So yeah, Sokka he's the fall guy. Like, he is the comic relief, and he's the Xander, and, you know, he's the Ron Weasley. But he's also so much more than that as well. Not that those characters aren't also so much more than their own trope as well. But he plays that part really well, and has some really hilarious moments, but also really nice moments too. Mine, I kind of chucked in a soccer line that I found hilarious and ridiculous, which was, you know, him sort of getting all histrionic and you know, worked up about the situation when, you know, Katara tries to be all like, Aang brought us something we haven't had in forever. Fun. And I'm like, yeah, that's not really going to help you, honey. But, you know, Sokka is sort of more extreme about it. It's just like, we can't fight firebenders with fun, which I just think is a great sentence. And then Aang is sort of willingly like, well, have you ever tried? Which is ridiculous. But at this point, Aang also doesn't know how serious he's going to be, you know, with his only experience of, you know, firebending. He said, you know, in the episode, like, I've got friends in all of the four nations, and, you know, he doesn't know anything about this major fire nation conflict. And, you know, I think that the idea of this kind of level of war and damage is something that's pretty hard for him to process. But just Sokka's histrionics in general I find hilarious. But I threw this one in because Caitlin took the line I wanted again, which, Caitlin, please go ahead with this.
So this was mentioned previously in the episode, but it's when Zuko confronts Aang after he's slid in on his penguin, and Zuko's saying that he's, you know, waited for this moment and meditated, and he's just like, you're just a child, and Aang says, well, you're just a teenager, and I'm like, yeah, That's the show.
Like, I love it. I love it so much.
It's just, yeah, it's just phenomenal because, yeah, Zuko is, he's just the teenager. As I said, he is the teenager in not just this show, but in the history of time. He is the perfect angsty teen.
Like, just also, again, with the show, like, being aware of what it is, you know? I mean, like, I really don't know of another show. Like, a lot of shows become self-aware, you know? But in episode one, in episode two, like, to be like, like, we're just literally making fun of the stuff that we're doing right now is, you know, like, yep, person who's saving the world is a kid.
Yeah.
Yep. The person who's trying to hunt him down is a teenager. Like, I love it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know that they must have had everything very kind of together when they didn't write it as they were going along, if you know what I mean. They had all of it written very closely, and I think it's one of the benefits of having like a writing team that does a whole season themselves. Like, they didn't have, you know, it was the idea of two guys, and they wrote the whole thing themselves. Like, every episode. It wasn't like random teams where a writer wrote a different episode and someone else wrote this. And, you know, it happens a little bit further on, but they really had it all as one concept, what, you know, that they put together. And I think having a team work that closely and hard on something and actually just be one vision as opposed to a scattered kind of like, oh, every, you know, this is randomly, you know, written by all sorts of different people. I think that actually is a big, big help for any show, that because it keeps it really clean and really sort of just well put together. And I think that's just always shown to me. But yeah, does anyone have anything about this episode before we sort of read our feedback and close off before next time? Nope.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but I don't remember what it was.
Radio. All right. Well, if you remember, please let us know. All right. Well, just to – I hope that you've enjoyed our recap of the first two episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender, whether you are a fan yourself or whether you're taking this opportunity to watch it for the first time. Let us know either way, actually. I'm curious to see if there's anyone who is starting up the show, you know, using this as an opportunity to start up watching the show for the first time, because there's really no excuse. You should be watching it, and that's it. So, you know, if you want to tell us about your position with the show, you can get in touch on the email, which is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter, which is @re_watchable. In this post on Hyperball, you can tell us what you thought of this episode, or if you like this episode, you can also leave a review on the iTunes page for Rewatchable, which is always very, very appreciated. We have a little bit of listener feedback since we announced that, you know, we're doing Avatar. It's obviously, people are very, very passionate about it, as we said, you know, whether it was, you know, the amount of people on Hyperball that said we should do this show, or what we discussed with the shippers and all of that kind of thing. You know, the fandom is massive. You know, it's one of the biggest fandoms for cosplay. It's one of the biggest ongoing fandoms, and it was the passion of this fandom that ended up getting, you know, enough attention to Nickelodeon as an ongoing thing that they ended up bringing it back for a new era with Legend of Korra. But in the meantime, you know, we're not going to get to let, you know, we're not going to be having any time to, you know, well, you know, we're watching Korra on the side, but Brittany won't be watching Legend of Korra for a long time.
And not for, at least for 7 months.
No, yeah, definitely not before then. But I know a fair few people who actually picked up on Korra and then went back, which would have been interesting. Like they did Korra first, just when it started airing new, which would have been an interesting experience. But anyway, in the meantime, we'll read some feedback from some of our listeners that are going to be following the show for whatever reason. So does everyone want to read one piece of these? Should we just go down? I'll do the first one, and then should we do it in the same order that the signed-offs here say? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. So we've got one from Twitter, which was Rain Phelan, I hope I said that right, who says, this will be my sixth rewatch of Avatar The Last Airbender. I'm so excited that this is the show you chose. I hope you love it. I think that it hopefully will be. I think I've rewatched it. This might be my third of, no, it might be my fourth go, maybe. I think that's right. Does anyone know what rewatch this is for them? If it's, you know, if you guys are a chronic watcher who watches things a lot, or is this just your second time through? Brittany, obviously, you don't count.
No.
Well, you count for lots of things, don't worry. But just not for this particular
For me, I think it's my third complete rewatch, but with the caveat that I only watched the finale once. Like, I literally only watched it one time. And then when I did my last rewatch, like, a year or two ago, I got up to the finale and then I just stopped.
Oh, my God.
It was, like, a combination of, like, having mixed memories of the finale and also being like, I don't want to finish this. I don't want it to be over. I'm not going to do it. I'll watch it tomorrow. And then I just didn't. So that all that will be sort of fresher than
that's going to be hard than it maybe should to be. Do in that's going to be hard to do in like split episodes, that whole
I don't think we can. Well, I mean, I guess that technically it's two parts, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, two parts of an hour each.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's just, I mean, this isn't a spoilery thing, but yeah, the whole season finale, the whole series finale is like over 4 or 5 episodes all in a kind of block. So I don't know, I'm sure we'll tackle that when we come to it. But there are several parts of the show that are a two-part arc or a three-part arc, and we're just going to have to address that, I suppose, when we come to it, whether it seems like it should be, you know, all in the same episode or whether they'll just be split up as normal. But, yeah, Caitlin, do you know how many times you've watched it before?
This may be my third full rewatch, but I rewatch a lot of individual episodes just on their own, so I haven't done much of like full rewatching, but there are certain episodes I've watched like 7 or 8 times at least.
Yeah. Oh god, like what, just off the top of your head?
Oh, a lot. Oh, of I think we can 3.
Pardon?
Yeah.
Oh, pardon, sorry,
it's just
saying, I think I can imagine which episodes Caitlin would rewatch a lot of.
Yeah, a lot of season 3, Caitlin.
Yes, yeah. Especially certain field trips, let's say that.
Oh my god.
Fields!
Oh my god. Okay, all right, let's carry on quickly. So we can all go and sign off, because we've had quite a long episode. Mikhail, do you want to read the next piece of feedback?
Corbin says, I think on the post, he's a, okay, Star Capitals. Yes, my favorite animated show for 7 months. Thank you, Heaven.
I like your Capitals voice.
And all, yeah, and all capitals. I must now add another podcast to my ever-growing podcast list. I swear I listen to more podcasts than I watch shows. Welcome to my life, Corbin. Welcome to
Caitlin.
Also from the Hypeable post is Sophia, who says, so excited. This will be the first time that I'm not a newbie for anything Rewatchable has covered. So welcome to being a fan. It's exciting.
Yeah, I kind of wish I was a newbie for this, although I would probably go crazy. But I feel like I'm going to go crazier not being able to say things. But oh well. And Brittany, do you want to finish us off here?
Sure. So also on the Hypeable post, we have Bright Lights and Angel. Angles? Yeah. All right.
Tiny corners.
They say, I'm so excited for this. I've never listened to or participated in Rewatchable before, but I just had to subscribe to the podcast when I heard you were covering Avatar: The Last Airbender. It'd be so cool to hear what other people think of each episode, because when I was watching it, I didn't have anyone to talk to or geek out with. Well, make sure you comment on the iTunes podcast, because we love comments.
Yay.
In iTunes.
Yay.
And we'll take penguin sledding.
I remember what I was going to say before.
Oh, good.
Which is that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but Rewatchable has done Firefly, Veronica Mars, and Pushing Daisies, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this is the first show that hasn't been canceled.
Yep.
Oh, were all of the others actually canceled, like, as opposed to just finishing normally?
Yeah, they were all canceled.
And Avatar was just, what, it got 3 seasons and that was it? Like, it wasn't...
I think they had always planned for it to be 3 seasons.
Yeah, it's definitely got a planned out ending point.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Yeah, like, so yeah, that's, it'll be cool, I suppose. That's a good aspect to put it together. Having something that isn't sort of being closed off, you know, against its will, I guess. But yeah, excited to go on, and then we'll watch the next episodes for next week, which will have some different hosts, probably featuring Donya as your lead speaking, questioning voice. In the meantime, we'll all say goodbye, unless anyone has anything at all to round off before we go. Nope.
No.
All right.
I have a shower.
All right. So, yeah, thank you for joining us for Avatar: The Last Airbender on Rewatchable. We're very, very excited to start the show. I've been Natalie. Goodbye.
I'm Michal. Have a nice day.
I'm Caitlin. Catch y'all later.
I'm Brittany without a cool sign-off catchphrase.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.